Jerry Bader Show 935. Big news over the weekend, of course. The return of Sergeant Bo Bergdahl from the clutches of the Taliban in exchange for five of their members from Gitmo. You could tell Senator Ron Johnson, when he discussed this with us in the last half hour, very guarded in his criticism. I want to share a couple of things with you, and then I want your thoughts on this. I'll tell you what I think as well. Trading with the Taliban. Other Americans will pay the price for the terrorist hostage swap. This, today's Wall Street Journal. The return of Sergeant Bo Bergdahl from the clutches of the Taliban is cause for relief for his family and all Americans, but there's no denying that the price of his recovery is high. The Obama administration swapped five of the hardest cases at Gitmo in a fashion that will encourage terrorists to kidnap more Americans to win the release of more prisoners. This doesn't mean we agree with Republicans who say President Obama broke the law by failing to inform Congress 30 days in advance of the prisoner release from Gitmo. Presidential power is never stronger than in the role of commander-in-chief. Congress did not attempt to use its comparably strong power of the purse. Instead, Congress's Gitmo language sought bluntly to constrain Mr. Obama's wartime decision-making. This is unconstitutional, as the president averred in a statement at the time he signed the bill. That Mr. Obama and his liberal friends denounce George W. Bush for similar signing statements is one more anti-terror irony of this presidency. Readers should watch to see if the same politicians and newspapers that assailed Mr. Bush are more forgiving when a Democratic president is using the same war powers. The real problem with this prisoner swap is the message it conveys about American weakness, especially in the context of Mr. Obama's retreat from Afghanistan and elsewhere. The world's bad actors have long perceived that the U.S. doesn't negotiate over hostages, in contrast to, say, France or Italy. This has made American soldiers and civilians less promising targets. The Taliban swap will change that perception and increase the likelihood that more Americans will be grabbed, not least in Kabul. But don't be surprised if 9/11 plotter Khalid Sheikh Mohammed shows up on a list of future prisoner swap demands. You wonder if they would do that. It's true that Israel has also traded Palestinian prisoners, sometimes hundreds at a time, for its captive soldiers. One difference is that Israel conducts those swaps in the context of an otherwise tough anti-terror policy. This includes unilateral targeting of Hamas and periodic military operations against terrorist havens. No one doubts Israeli resolve. The same isn't true of the Obama administration, and the Taliban swap will only underscore the perception that the U.S. is tiring of its anti-terror fight. Mr. Obama announced last week that the U.S. will withdraw all its military forces from Afghanistan by the end of 2016, no matter the facts on the ground. The U.S. hasn't used drones to hit a terror target in Pakistan since December. The prisoner swap sends a similar message of retreat. All the more so because the five free Taliban, or Taliban, as the president would say, killers are likely to return to the battlefield. Though they will supposedly have to stay in Qatar for a year, that means little to men who've been in Gitmo for a decade. They'll probably spend their year boning up on Taliban and Al-Qaeda war plans. The reason these five weren't previously released is because they were deemed high security risks by the Joint Task Force Guantanamo. They are the most senior Taliban commanders remaining in U.S. custody, and even the Obama administration approved them for indefinite detention. Two of them were present at the fortress in northern Afghanistan in November 2001 when Taliban prisoners revolted against their captors in the anti-Taliban Northern Alliance. CIA operative Johnny Michael Spann died in the melee, the first American casualty of the Afghan War. The duo are also suspected of war crimes for the mass murder of Shiites in Afghanistan before 9/11. One was a close advisor to Mullah Omar, the Taliban leader who has escaped U.S. capture and is believed to be living near Quetta in Pakistan. Soon, they will be back in business plotting new attacks. The release of these Taliban killers also undercuts U.S. complaints against the Afghan government's release of its dangerous Taliban captives. U.S. officials rightly objected to President Karzai's February release of 65 prisoners after the U.S. military turned them over to Afghan control. The Afghan military and police who will have to fight these five Taliban also have reason to be upset. Mr. Obama said in a statement on Saturday that he hopes the prisoner swap will lead to a resumption of peace talks with the Taliban. But this reverses the usual order. In Vietnam and most other wars, the prisoner releases were part of a peace deal. In this case, the Taliban can continue the war with their ranks enhanced. If the Taliban now negotiates, it won't be because Mr. Obama's Gitmo release has changed their intentions. It will be because they sense they can gain more by talking than by fighting. More likely, the success of their hostage taking and Mr. Obama's 2016 withdrawal pledge will convince them that they can keep fighting while they talk and still win. Today's Wall Street Journal. Now, again, problematic here. I agree with all of that. Problematic for Republicans, and I think that's why Ron Johnson was as guarded as you heard him in his criticism of the president, is because you are arguing against the release of an American. But now let me add this in from the Daily Beast. We lost soldiers in the hunt for Bergdahl, a guy who walked off in the dead of night. For 5 years, soldiers have been forced to stay silent about the disappearance and search for Bergdahl. Now we can talk about what really happened. It was June 30th, 2009, and I was in the city of Shirana, the capital of Paktika province in Afghanistan. As I stepped out of a decrepit office building into a perfect sunny day, a member of my team started talking into his radio. "Say that again? There's an American soldier missing?" There was. His name was Private First Class Bo Bergdahl, the only prisoner of war in the Afghan theater of operations. His release from Taliban custody on Saturday marks the end of a nearly five-year-old story for the soldiers of his unit. "I served in the same battalion in Afghanistan, took part in the attempts to retrieve him throughout the summer of 09. After we redeployed, every member of my brigade combat team received an order that we were not allowed to discuss what happened to Bergdahl for fear of endangering him. He is safe, and now it is time to speak the truth. And the truth is this. Bergdahl was a deserter, and soldiers from his own unit died trying to track him down. On the night prior to his capture, Bergdahl pulled guard duty at OP Mest, a small outpost about 2 hours south of the provincial capital. The base resembled a wagon circle of armored vehicles with some razor wire strung around them. A guard tower sat high up on a nearby hill, but the only outpost itself was no fortress. Besides the tower, the only hard structure that I saw in July of 09 was a plywood shed filled with bottled water. Soldiers either slept in poncho tents or inside their vehicles. The next morning, Bergdahl failed to show for the morning roll call. The soldiers in 2nd Platoon, Blackfoot Company, discovered his rifle, helmet, body armor, and web gear in a neat stack. He had, however, taken his compass. His fellow soldiers later mentioned his stated desire to walk from Afghanistan to India. The Daily Beast's Christopher Dickey later wrote that whether Bergdahl just walked away from his base or was lagging behind on patrol at the time of his capture remains an open and fiercely debated question. "Not to me and the members of my unit, make no mistake. Bergdahl did not lag behind on patrol, as was cited in news reports at the time. There was no patrol that night. Bergdahl was relieved from guard duty, and instead of going to sleep, he fled the outpost on foot. He deserted. I've talked to members of Bergdahl's platoon, including the last Americans to see him before his capture. I've reviewed the relevant documents. That's what happened." He then talks about what they did to try to find him. His disappearance translated into daily search missions across the entire Afghanistan theater of operations, particularly ours. The combat platoons in our battalion spent the next month on daily helicopter insertion search missions called air assaults, trying to scour villages for signs of him. Each operation would send multiple platoons and every enabler available in the pursuit. Radio intercept teams, military working dogs, professional anthropologists used as intel gathering teams, Afghan sources in disguise. They would be out for at least 24 hours. I know some who were on a mission for 10 days at a stretch. In July, the temperature was well above 100 degrees Fahrenheit each day. These cobbled together units' task was to search villages one after another. They took rifle and mortar fire from insurgents or perhaps just angry locals. They intermittently received resupply from soot-coated MI-17s piloted by Russian contractors, many of whom were Soviet veterans of Afghanistan. It was hard, dirty, and dangerous work. The searchers enraged the local civilian population and derailed the counterinsurgency operations taking place at the time. What he's saying is just this guy walking off created huge hardship and set back the effort in Afghanistan. At every juncture, I remember the soldiers involved asking why we were burning so much gasoline trying to find a guy who had abandoned his unit in the first place. The war was already absurd and quixotic, but the hunt for Bergdahl was even more infuriating because it was all the result of some kid doing something unnecessary by his own volition. On July 4th, 2009, a human wave of the insurgents attacked the joint U.S.-Afghan post at Zirak. It was in East Paktika province, the domain of our sister infantry battalion. Two Americans died. Many more received wounds. Hundreds of insurgents attacked and were only repelled by teams of Apache helicopters. Zirak was very close to the Pakistan border, which put into the same category as outposts now infamous. Places like COP Keating or Wanat, places where insurgents could mass on the Pakistani side and then try to overwhelm the outnumbered defenders. He goes on, but here's his thesis. In fact, seriously, look, he's not a secret. He's safe now, so I can talk. The guy deserted. We exerted huge resources trying to track him down, including lost American lives. He's no hero. He's a deserter. To get him home, we just gave up five dangerous members of the Taliban and set the precedent that we will give up hostages. Something that the United States has never done. Call them prisoners of war, call them hostages, call them whatever you want. We gave up five incredibly deadly killers in exchange for a guy who very possibly deserted. Best case scenario, he wandered off on his own incompetence. I understand it's difficult for an elected official to criticize the release of an American returning to his family. I get that. However, I cannot defend this. I think this was a tremendous mistake. And I want to get your thoughts on that in 3 minutes. And I want you to really think about, I've thrown a lot of stuff at you. And I want you to think about all of the stuff that I have thrown at you. We'll get to that in about 4 minutes. It's 9:48. Pretty momentous weekend for the Bader family. Our younger daughter graduated from high school. She's now on to college to join her sister at Eau Claire in the fall. And on Friday, my wife and I both weighed in at Dr. Litwin's office. Of course, Proactive Weight Loss Solutions. My wife is actively on the program. She's now lost just about 20 pounds. And as of Friday, the scale of the doctor's office officially 60 pounds lost for me. I'm now exercising, jogging, resistance exercise, trying to get in better shape and still lose even just a few pounds. By the way, I'm going to post on Facebook before and after pictures because listeners are asking for that. And my wife at graduation got the, oh, you're losing weight treatment, which, trust me, a lady always likes to hear. You want to learn more about it, call Dr. Litwin at 920-268-1386. Call Dr. Jason Litwin, 920-268-1386.
The Jerry Bader Show.